The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the podcast with the people who create your perspective.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My guest today is a good one. A lot of you from the 90s and the 2000s and the conservative movement around the state of Georgia will know this name, State Senator Don Balfour. Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be with you today.
I am honored to have you. I was talking to Brian Robinson, who I know you know, and I was talking to Don Bolia at Peachtree Government Relations, and I told him I'd reached out to you, and I was like, I love good storytellers where people have had life happen to them. But I want to tell you, when I first got interested in politics, I was in elementary school. I went to Knight Elementary. You were my state senator over in Gwinnett County. You had Killian Hill Road, Five Forks, Trickum, Dogwood, the mean streets. You probably went all the way over to Highway 78.
Oh, absolutely. Beyond 78, actually, all the way to 124 over there in Centerville.
And there was nothing out there then.
No, there was nothing.
No, and then to say that that has changed is an understatement.
Yep.
And I remember three signs in my early childhood. Bob Dole for president, Bill Clinton for president, and Don Balfour for state senate. Does that bring back a lot of good memories of those days running for office in the early 90s?
It does. When I first ran, Gwinnett County had just gone through reapportionment. And we went from having five House members to 12. And we went from having...
That was a drastic change,
oh,
wasn't
yeah.
it?
We went from having two state senators to five. And so we had a lot of change going on. I had been the Gwinnett County party chairman, and it was the perfect time for me to run for state senate. There was another gentleman who'd been in the House, and he was running for the Senate. He took on the mantle as being the incumbent, you know, because he had represented in the House about two-thirds of the Senate, new Senate district.
So they knew him more than they knew you.
Absolutely. In my mind, it was a very anti-incumbent year, so I accused him of being the incumbent, too. He wanted to be the incumbent. All right, you're the incumbent. I had been teaching a college and career Sunday school class at my church. It was a pretty new church.
Oh, where did you go?
Grace Fellowship.
I know Buddy Hoffman.
Buddy was a great friend of mine. In fact, I was sitting in a deacon meeting once because my sister-in-law came down to visit one summer, and I'm in this deacon meeting pounding my hand on the table saying, you know, I had to send my sister-in-law to another church because we didn't have a college and career ministry, and we need to have a college and career ministry. And Buddy just looked at me and said, well, start it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I have a problem. I say we have a problem.
I ran cross country with, well, I didn't run because I was on the boys team, but I ran cross country with his daughter, Joy.
Okay.
And she's probably a year or two older than me. But just a good
yep.
family.
Yeah, great,
watching
great
that
people.
Church grow
yeah. Yeah.
from, you know, borderline Stone Mountain and then having to move off Dogwood right by Brookwood High School.
Right.
It was impressive.
Yeah.
I have not thought about that name in ages.
Buddy was a great guy. Buddy was a wonderful person. I sometimes wonder if he realized that I was just a state senator because he would have a problem and, you know, he'd call me
up. He wanted federal funding for a military installation.
Well, yeah. they went on a missionary trip to Jordan once. They had to make an excuse that it was something else because you can't go into some of these Arab countries in a missionary.
Sure.
So they went over there to minister to these missionaries who technically weren't missionaries. They were whatever.
Medical health care
right,
workers.
Right, right.
Sure.
And he calls me up one day and says, Don, I got a problem. I said, okay, what's your problem? We're at Hartsfield Airport, ready to get on a plane to go to Chicago to then get the flight to Amman. And Delta's not letting this girl on a plane. I said, well,
Your visa doesn't look right.
Why they're not letting her play? Well, her passport expires in 5 months. I said, and at the time, I said, well, how long are you staying? We're staying a week. The passport's fine. I mean, and what I didn't realize was your passport expires 6 months before its expiration date.
Yep.
Which is bizarre, but that I called my friends at Delta and they let her on the plane, but they said, Don, when she gets to Chicago, Air Jordan's not going to let her on the plane. I mean, they're just not going to let her on a plane. And she's going to have to fly back. So, well, if that's the case, we'll fly her back. And in the meantime, I called the Jordanian embassy and kind of forgot the state thing and just said, Senator Balfour. And
yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. And
Turns out they boarded her first.
Well, the funny thing was 2 hours later, I was in New York at something. 2 hours later, Buddy calls me. Buddy had a high-pitched laugh, and he's laughing. I said, Buddy, are they letting her on the plane? He goes, Don, not only are they letting her. First of all, when she went to check in, there was a letter there from the King of Jordan. Now, I'm sure it was one of their handlers.
Of course.
It was from the King of Jordan saying, this person is a special friend of the king's. Treat her with all due respect. Now, they had bought church tickets, which was probably $600, $700 a piece round trip, and she was sitting in first class. She had a bed.
Yeah,
flight over there. So
it turns out waiting to renew your passport has its advantages if you know a United States senator.
But Buddy was good at and he didn't ask out of bounds, but he would ask from time to time and ask for advice from time to time.
He died of pancreatic cancer, didn't he?
He had a heart problem. He had a major heart problem and. He recovered from it once, but then it was going to be terminal eventually.
Yeah,
yeah.
Tell me about growing up. Where'd you grow up? How'd you find Georgia? I know you went to Bob Jones University, which is about as conservative a place as the world has to offer.
Right. I grew up in South River, New Jersey. The claim to fame for South River was we had a few football players, Joey Theismann, who.
You've heard of him. He's got the knee.
Yeah, yeah. And Drew Pearson, who ended up being a great wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys. And I remember growing up watching them play in high school, which was amazing. My dad was a Baptist minister in New Jersey at Tabernacle Baptist Church. So that was my early childhood and so forth. My parents thought it best for me to go off to school, so I went 800 miles away to a private high school, Bob Jones Academy, and spent 4 years at Bob Jones Academy. It was great for me, who needed a little structure, academically very strong. And then while I was there, obviously I knew a lot of people and got to know more people, so therefore going to Bob Jones University made a lot of sense because it was kind of a home for me. So
still in Greenville.
Still correct? In Greenville.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I know a handful of people that have gone there over time. Not any in a long time, but I'm kind of past that phase of life.
Right.
When you graduate from there, what makes you move to Atlanta?
Well, I interviewed for different jobs in different places. I had been to Atlanta many times. When I was interviewing for positions, I was looking at some of the at that point Big Eight accounting firms. And I got offers in New York City, which would have been fine, that let's say they were, at that point, $35,000 jobs.
Huge money.
Huge money. And I got offered basically the same money in Atlanta. Now, it doesn't take you long to figure out, well, wait a minute, in New Jersey, I'd spend $5,000 a year on transportation, taking the bus into Port of Authority, and then take the subway to your office.
Or 3 hours of your day.
2-3 hours every single day. We're in Atlanta. When, in fact, my wife and I came down. We were married at that point, not very long, 3 or 4 months. We came down. I interviewed for Arthur Anderson. She went to interview for some nursing jobs, which as a nurse, you can get a job anywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
And even in that first week while we were down, we both got job offers. And we looked for a house and bought one right behind Stone Mountain Park. People downtown, when I told them where I lived, they were like, you live way out there? Now, to me, 25 miles away from my office was a dream.
Absolutely.
To them, it was like, you're moving way out there? Why'd you do that? But that was the first place we moved to, which was off North Deshawn Road, right before behind the little airport that was right there in Stone Mountain.
You know, I don't go a lot to Stone. I don't imagine you go to Stone Mountain a whole lot either. But I'll go once or twice a year. Every time I walk out on the lawn, I'm 15.
Right.
It doesn't change.
Right.
It has changed drastically.
Right.
But I walk out there, and I am a child. I see the kids selling the glow sticks at the laser show.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm talking before the, like, hand-blown glass, you know, meet and three restaurant, whatever you could do. You could go throw the Frisbee for 2 or 3 hours. I felt like it was my childhood.
Yep.
And to the point, like, if you look at the logo for the show, it's everybody. I had to pick something. And I'm a Metro Atlanta guy, and I know most of Georgia is not, but they can tolerate Stone Mountain. And so I put Stone Mountain as the logo on the for the show. And people always say, that's a pretty cool concept. It's like, yeah, you don't have to tell anybody what it is.
Right.
And as it gets regionally, and I have people that are, you know, national profile people, they all know what Stone Mountain is.
Sure.
It may be based in controversy, but they all know. But I still, every time I go there, it's not based in anything other than nostalgia. It's wonderful.
Well, in fact, Martin Luther King, in his I Have a Dream speech, mentions from Stone Mountain to, you know, so he even mentions it in his things.
As you grow your accounting career, what prompts the itch for public service and to get involved in the GOP in Gwinnett County, which, by the way, 30 years ago was a very different place than it is today?
Yeah, 40 years ago, but thank you anyhow.
We'll go 30.
Yeah, there you go. My dad was a Baptist minister. He never mixed that with politics, but he loved politics. He loved politics. And so we would watch it on TV. We would follow it. I'll never forget in 1968, staying up till 3 or 4 in the morning. Did Nixon win? Did Humphrey win? And the back and forth of that very early race till finally Humphrey conceded. So some of the love comes from my dad. I started out with this love. So when I left Arthur Anderson and went to work for Waffle House. They needed a tax accountant. I was a tax accountant, so I went to work at Waffle House.
And you don't like coffee.
And I'm not a coffee guy. Don't tell Joe Rogers that. Whoops, he might have heard this. But I went to work at Waffle House, and Joe was very active in the Republican Party. And the Gwinnett Republican Party, again,
It was a place that was blowing up.
Yeah, it was blowing up. It was getting big, and Gwinnett County was getting big. And I think when I first moved to Gwinnett, I think there were about 140,000 people in the county, and now there's 1.5 million or something.
My parents still live in the same house I grew up in.
Is that right?
And I told them when I was in college, I was like, you gotta look at the escape plan. You know, I don't want to take anything away from because there are a ton of good people that still live there.
Absolutely.
And you know a ton of them, and I know a ton of them. And I always will maintain, it's home.
Right.
Fortunate to live in Alpharetta, and I'm grateful for all the opportunities that I have. But, like, I can drive Ronald Reagan Parkway with blindfolded.
Right.
I can just tell by the time when it's time to exit onto Five Forks Trickum or Bethesda Church Road or any of them. Steven Still.
Yep.
It's not as nostalgic as Stone Mountain, but it's way up there.
Yep, absolutely.
And I still check to see when Parkview beats Brookwood. tell me this. So you grow that relationship at Waffle House. Did Joe Rogers, who was the CEO of Waffle House,
right. And
lived to be the ripe old age of 97, like he had a good run.
He absolutely did.
Was he one of the people who really pushed you to consider getting involved or not?
No, and you're talking Joe Sr., I'm talking Joe Jr. Joe Sr. Almost didn't even like politicians. They were too hoity-toity in there. And Joe Sr., Joe Jr., Joe 3, very similar. They're all in the restaurant guys. They'll spend one day a week in the corporate office and 5 days a week in the restaurants.
That's great.
And some people kind of tilt their head a little bit when you tell them that, and the answer to the question not asked is, how many cash registers do you see in that corporate headquarters? None.
Yeah.
So I almost spend the time where the customers are. But it was Joe Jr., and he didn't really push me into it, but I could tell that one day I saw...
He'd support you if you wanted to.
Yeah. I saw where we made a political contribution to Trent Lott for Congress.
Right.
Not Senate, but this is when he was running for Congress.
When he was a young man.
Yeah, and I was looking at that thinking, I didn't think you could give a corporate contribution to a congressman. So I made some inquiries, and I checked a little bit, and I said, Joe, we made a mistake here. But in the meantime, I talked to the RNC and said, listen, we made this mistake. How do we reverse it?
We don't want to be illegal.
Right. And they said, well, you can give corporate money. I was like, you know, I don't see that. What do you mean? Well, you can give corporate money. You can't give it out of corporate retained earnings. I said, when is corporate money not out of return? Well, get someone just to reimburse the company. So I had been at Waffle House months, and I'm writing a letter to the CEO of the company, Joe Rogers Jr. Joe Rogers Sr. by this point is you know, the founder, but
aging.
He's aging, and turned it over to his son. And here I am writing a note to Joe Jr., who I don't know that well, saying, Joe, you need to reimburse the company $1,000. And some people at the company are like, that's not a long-term career move you're making there,
I don't know.
Don.
Keeping him out of jail might be.
Yeah. Well, and that's the way he looked at it.
Absolutely.
Good catch. Great. Yep, absolutely. And he wrote a check and I think blamed the mistake on his secretary.
Sure, of course.
But he wrote a check and reimbursed the company. Now, the question never got asked, but if the question had been asked, we would have said, no, it wasn't out of retained earnings. This was a corporate check, but it wasn't out of retained earnings. And so that was my first. Then I saw where, you know, because I'm in charge of accounting, and I see where we're writing checks to different people. And I'm like, Joe, are you going to those things? You know, like Vice President George H.W. Bush is coming to town. No, I'm not going. Well, you gave the money. He goes, well, they asked, and I gave the money. I said, you need someone there to represent you. So I started representing him at representing the company at these different meetings.
And they knew who Waffle House was.
Oh, they did, yeah. And the mystique of Joe Rogers, who everyone knew he was, they described him as Paul Bunyan with an accent. I mean, they'd never met him, never seen him, but they knew exactly who he was. And
I know the name.
Yeah.
I know the names. I couldn't tell you if they walked in here and slapped me with a 2x4, and I'm sure that's how they like it. It's honestly like an opposite approach of the right. Caffeys.
That's right. Yeah, they're good people. They're good people. And he didn't push me at all, but when I decided I was thinking about running for Gwinnett County chairman, I made sure I went to him because that's going to take a little bit of time, not a great amount, but a little bit of time. And he encouraged me to, go do it. So I did that. And then a year and a half later, when we're go through all this reapportionment and all these open seats are there, I went back to him and said, I'm thinking about running for state senate. And he agreed. And so he gave me the opening of doing that. Now, when I was in the state senate in my early years, we were in a minority.
Yeah, I bet you didn't have a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I was... In the Georgia Senate, there's 56 senators. When I first ran, there were 10 Republican. And they didn't, Democrats didn't ignore us because, you know, we're the opposition. They just ignored us because they didn't need us for anything.
Is that a hard way to spend 40 days plus all the other time just knowing that you weren't making a difference?
Yeah, yeah. Now, the first year, we went from 10 to 15.
So you could see it a little bit.
The very next year, not the next session, the next year, we added 2 more seats in a special election, went to 17. The next full election cycle, we went to 19. So we went from 10 to 19 literally in 2 years. So we were knocking on the door. We were working on things. But, again, in a minority, I didn't know this at the time, but it's somewhat easy in a minority.
Oh, you just throw rocks.
Yeah, you come up with what we would call gotcha amendments. I'll give you a funny one. Roy Barnes is wanting to change the state flag, which I voted for because I think it needed to be changed.
Yeah, commercially for sure.
Right.
It's easy to say in 2024.
No, that's right. That's right.
But that was a big deal.
At the time it was. And the House Republicans, in the minority, had the gotcha amendment that year. And their gotcha amendment was they wanted to put on the flag, "In God We Trust." Now, I'm not sure they really wanted to put "In God We Trust" on the state flag. They just wanted to
They wanted
all the Democrats to vote against God.
Yeah.
I mean, how are they going to vote against God? Now, they didn't vote against God, which is why "In God We Trust" is on the state flag today. But we would always have that. Going back to the vote on the state flag.
Sit there for a minute, because that was a huge deal.
It was. I'm, again, from New Jersey.
Right.
I have no idea what these guys are talking about.
100%. I grew up as a military kid in Hawaii, and my family, my mom and dad, are both from North Carolina, and so they have a little bit. They watch desegregation.
Right.
But I didn't have any.
Right. Well, you know, you go back to 1956, which is the year the flag changed to the stars and bars, and you wonder, why did they change the flag in that year? Why didn't they wait until 1960, which would have been the 100th anniversary of the start of the Civil War?
Right.
Well, they did it in 56 because the year before, the Supreme Court ruled that schools had to be integrated. And it was a way of shooting
the
bird at the Supreme Court. You couldn't overdo the Supreme Court. And they did that in numerous ways. Snellville had a public pool. They privatized it that year. In fact, there was a lot of privatization that year. And I would have thought as a conservative, oh, that's good. Gwinnett County shouldn't be in pool.
They did it to be disingenuous.
They did that because if it's a county pool or city pool, you had to let blacks swim in it. They privatized it because at that point, a private entity could do what they wanted to do.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah,
it still happens.
Oh, no, that's right.
I mean, not necessarily over racial stuff, but there's, make no mistake, like, people still use all the rules.
Right. So we were about to vote, and Roy Barnes needed a few Republicans. I was a little naive. In fact, he called me on a Saturday. I'm like, how's the governor have my personal cell phone number? Of course, the governor's got my personal cell phone number. But he called me, asked for my vote. I didn't totally commit to him, but I said, Roy, I probably said governor.
I grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah, Governor, I hear what you're saying. I will take a close look at it. We needed to make sure each Democrat walked the plank. So there were three or four of us that were going to vote for the changing the flag, which if we had announced that, there would have been three or four Democrats who could have voted against changing the flag, and it still would have changed.
Right.
So we set up a process where the four of us committed to the Republican leadership that we wouldn't commit.
Yeah, because you got to make them work.
And you have a minute to vote. In fact, there are three bells that I, to this day, I know exactly when those 15 seconds are going off because, oh, that's the last bell. I only have 15 seconds. I need to run and vote. And they had us either vote no to begin with or not vote at all. In fact, I'll never forget Mark Taylor sitting up there with someone else, and they're looking at, because they can see the board as it's lighting up, which is not on the big board. It's just on the lieutenant governor's board. And they're looking for Republicans, and so they can get they can tell the Democrats, you can change your vote now to a no. Well, they had no way to know because we either didn't vote or we voted no to begin with, but then with 5 seconds to go, we went to yes, and they didn't have enough time to flip votes. So there were four or five Democrats that ended up walking the plank that didn't have to, which then caused them to lose their reelection.
Isn't the game inside the game just fascinating?
It is.
It never changes.
Now, the other thing you talk, you know, at the time, I had no idea what this was all about. Some people kind of figured out that what I was going to do. You know, I'm from New Jersey, and I'm going to probably do this.
You're not like supportive of the 1865 South.
Right. And I was getting phone calls all weekend long. You and Lover You.
Snellville was a different place.
Oh, yeah. You and Lover You.
And that's what, 99?
Yeah.
2000?
Yeah. You know, we're going to get you.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, wait a minute, I thought you said this was about Southern states' rights and stuff like that. But you're in my mind, at least I'm saying to myself, you're proving to me
that I'm right,
that what I'm doing is the right thing.
100%.
And I never did this in my 22-year Senate career before or since. But that day when I went out to get in my car, I got on my knees and I looked under the car. I don't know what a bomb looks like, but I literally thought, if I start my car,
yeah,
or click the door open, is going to blow up.
Was that the most high-profile thing you ever voted on?
Yes.
Not necessarily the most consequential, although it was very consequential.
Yeah. When I got down to Capitol, I parked my car, walked in over to the LOB building, Legislative Office Building, and when I walked in, I saw someone walking down the street, a jeans, a polo shirt, and a sports jacket, and the sports jacket moved, and I saw a gun. Now, you know, he could have a concealed weapons license.
Of course.
He might not. But on that day, the state trooper there, I said, this guy's got a gun. He goes, which one? I pointed him out. He goes, that's okay. Okay, why is that okay? He's one of our undercover guys. They had undercover people. They had people in the balcony. They talked to us about if something, you know, probably is going to happen, it's going to happen from the gallery. Something happens.
It's so scary.
Always know where the exit doors are.
You think about it, is insane to think about that in 2024. Because we've just watched in the last year or two, the state of Mississippi change theirs.
Absolutely.
In being 30 or 40 years late to the, you know, or 25 years late to what common walking around sense
right.
means. And you looked at football coaches and Mike Leach at the time and Lane Kiffin were like, guys, like, this is a huge part of our economy. Well, we're going to be held down forever over right. this. And they candidly kind of deserve to.
Right, right.
When you look, I know you were instrumental with Georgia Gwinnett College, and thank you for that. As I was always trying to fail out of Samford University, it was always there to allow me to go get a couple of credits. I bet I got 45 of them out of that place. And that's really, if you asked me what your most meaningful contribution is to average people who will never give you credit for it, I have to imagine that is way up there.
It is. When I first ran for office, you know, you got to have three things you want to accomplish. And one was get rid of the reversible lanes on Highway 78, which were, in fact, my son, who was just starting to drive, my one rule was you can't drive on 78.
I have somebody in my listening audience who will absolutely love that.
I mean, it was the reversible lanes was a nightmare and so forth. And they've gotten rid of those now, and that's all fine. But one of the things was Gwinnett County was the largest populated county east of the Mississippi without a four-year college. We need to have a four-year college. And I had been on the Gwinnett Chamber Board for a few years representing Waffle House. And we had looked at one theory was, well, let's take Gwinnett Tech, which is the largest technical school in the state of Georgia, I think probably still is.
There's one across the street.
Yeah. Take Gwinnett Tech and turn it into Gwinnett College.
Right.
Which, you know, now – the final analysis of that said, no, we really do need a technical school. There's a real need for that, and there's a real need for a college. So I was pushing my first year. I was a freshman. I had no power to do anything. In fact, Tom Daniels, who's a lobbyist for the university system, would tell you the first time he came up to try to shake my hand, I said, when are we going to build a college in Gwinnett County? He was like, take it easy, Senator. We'll get there eventually. And it took about 10 years. But in about 10 years, I introduced the bill to allow the start of Georgia Gwinnett College, or a college in Gwinnett County to be named later. Funny thing that
I may have gone to it before it was named later.
And we had looked at three or four people to be president. And who wants to be the president of a college that doesn't exist? I mean, there's no students, there's no teachers, there's no academic people. The president's going to be the first person we hire. And luckily, there was a gentleman who was a West Point graduate, graduated first in his class from West Point, spent years in the military, and then was the academic dean at West Point for 20 years, so he had a lot of academia experience.
I would say so.
Yeah. And he was looking to retire from the military, and he was from Georgia to begin. I think he was from Brunswick, Georgia. So he was looking at moving back to the South. So he jumped at the job, and he got it. And he, you know, in 10 years, they went from zero students to just under 12,000.
That's a lot.
It's a huge growth. Now, if you grow that much, there's got to be a lot of hiccups along the way. You can't grow that fast without a lot of hiccups.
It changed that section of 316. Yeah,
and there really weren't. There really weren't that many hiccups. He kept on coming to me every year for money. And, in fact, Sonny Perdue was the governor at the time when I put money in the budget for the first building, which I think was like $20 million. The next year I came back for the phase two, next $20 million. Well, when I did phase one, he wasn't there yet. The Kauffman wasn't there yet. But I figured they need buildings.
Of course.
So I go to Sonny, Governor Perdue, with phase two. He goes, how many phases are there to this project? Now, the answer is I'm making it up.
Yeah, you didn't know. So you had a plot of land.
Oh, yeah. So I did phase two, and luckily we did those because we didn't have the academic rooms. And in fact, you look at – we were the fastest accredited school in the history of the United States of America.
Wow.
To be accredited, you have to graduate your first student. Now, in my mind, that would be you start your accreditation after 4 years.
Right.
It takes 4 years to graduate. Well – Kauffman went out and found 30 or 40 people who had 2 years worth of credits and brought them in. So it's a 2-year process now.
That's smart.
He's got teachers and professors who don't have a full load because they're teaching 5 or 10
kids. It's not there yet, yeah.
And so the thing that he had the teachers and professors do on the side was work on their, even though you couldn't apply yet, he was working on accreditation. So that when he graduates his first student, the very next day, he applied for accreditation. 6 months later, they were accredited. So in less than 3 years, they had full accreditation, which has a lot to do with, I call him General Kauffman. He was the president of the university, but I think his highest title was general. And he was, in fact,
Proud of that.
Yeah, very, yeah. Years later, I took my son and I would go away. He's in the military, and we'll go away for a weekend in the fall and see a college football game on Saturday, a pro football game on Sunday somewhere. And 1 year we went to West Point, and I made sure Kauffman, who I got him about $250 million on buildings. He said, yeah, I can get you tickets.
I can help you out with that.
So we had breakfast with the president of West Point. We were in his suite for the game. And so, in fact, afterwards, it was funny. We went down back to his house, and my son's having a drink, and I said, Trey, we need to leave. And he goes, no, I need to finish this drink. I said, is it that good? He goes, Dad, a 3-star general poured it for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was like.
Most people never meet one.
Right. So he thought that was, forget about how good the drink was. A 3-star general poured me this. I want to savor this.
When you look at, is there anything else that in your time before you kind of get into consulting, and we will get to the legal situation. Is there anything else that you just thought was that you were really, really proud of that was just incredibly hard?
Flipping Georgia from
blue to red.
Flipping Georgia was big, and we spent Eric Johnson, Tom Price, a number of us spent a lot of time working on that. But I'll go back a little bit on history on flipping Georgia. There were founders years before us, Paul Coverdale,
yep,
John Linder, Bob Bell, those type folks in the business community, Fred Cooper, Joe Rogers Jr., who paved the way for when things started to change, we were able to get it done. But in my 22 years, Georgia Gwinnett College is probably my top. Another one, which is just about to flip the switch to totally turn on, we're about to have the largest nuclear power plant in the United States of America in a couple weeks. They've finally on Unit 4, they're at 100%. They have to do a few more tests. I put the bill in to allow that to happen.
And average people walk past you every day. This is the thing I love about it, is because the best interviews I ever get to do, it's not necessarily Mike Pence or Marcus Allen. It's like the people who did the stuff that you know about and you have no idea who did it.
Right.
And I think that deserves to be told.
Well, those are it. But, you know, there's a lot of small things. And I'll give you just one example. I had a lady call me up one day. She was homeschooling her child. And in order to graduate, in Georgia, you have to pass the SAT, I think.
No, it's the, like, when I was in school, it was like the exit. It was like a standardized test exit exam. You didn't have to take the SAT.
There was some test you had to take to graduate. I remember taking that. And she's calling me up because this, her child, I can't remember, I think it was a boy, had already been accepted at Oglethorpe University, had a 1580 out of 1600 on the SAT.
Smart kid. But couldn't take that test.
But hadn't taken this one test, and they had applied for it. But when they applied for it at the beginning of May, one of the questions was, and the test is really a test for people our age who didn't complete high school. And they want to go back and get a high school diploma. That's what the test is that they missed out on. And so she filled out the paperwork, and one of the questions was, when did he complete his study? And the answer was, honestly, well, he hasn't. It's beginning of May. He doesn't complete it till the end of May. Well, they then denied him taking the test because he hasn't completed his study. Well, it comes to the end of May, she's talking to someone at the Department of Education who says, you know, we'll work this out. And all of a sudden she calls up the very next week, and he's on vacation. And the last test that you can take is like the next week. And if he doesn't take this test, technically he doesn't graduate from college, and therefore Oglethorpe takes back his scholarship.
Right. Yeah, it's stressful.
Now, I'm talking to the lady on the phone. You have to listen to both sides. And so it's, yeah, I hear her story, but what's the other side? I leave her on the phone. I call the Department of Education. I get the person on the phone who I tell them I have her on the phone too. So, you know, I'm not secretively doing something. And they tell me the exact same story. And I say, all right, we got to figure out a win-win. What do you have in mind, Senator? I said to the lady, I said, how long would it take you to drive down from Snellville to the Twin Towers? An hour. Okay, I want you to stand out front. Let her cross through. He hasn't, and put in. He has. Oh, we can't do that. Okay. How about text him a new form or fax him a new form and let him fill it out? And you know, no, we can't do that. Okay. How about you let him take the test? You hold the results until we get this applicant. No, we can't do that. And I finally threw the threat out there because this time we're in a majority and I'm the rules chairman. I said, okay, this.
Do you like this test?
This is going to cost you.
Yeah,
I'm going to cut your budget $10 million. I promise you, I will cut your budget $10 million. If we can't figure some way that the kid can take the test, and at that point they understood that I was serious and they figured out a way for the kid to take the test. A few days later, I get a call from the mom saying, what kind of cookies do you like? I'm like, excuse me? She goes, what kind of cookies do you like? I didn't even know who this lady was other than she was a constituent. Well, I like chocolate chip cookies. Well, about a week later, I got a knock on my door. The husband, the wife, the son is there. And I got a plate of 3 dozen chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean I can't be bought. It just, the price.
You got another currency.
The currency, 3 dozen chocolate chip cookies will do it.
You could get a lot done.
That's right.
At some point towards, I won't say, you were suspended by Governor Nathan Deal because there were charges brought against you for falsifying expense reports.
Yes.
Did you see something like that coming? And by the way, before we get there, you were totally acquitted by 12 jurors in Fulton County.
Right.
But I think sometimes that, you know, when things like that happen, the damage is done.
Right.
And that can be really unfair in the court of public opinion because it's not always the rule of law, and nobody knows better than you that they are very different things. But how did that come about, and what was that like on your life?
It's funny. If I tell the story, I was president of a national organization called National Conference of State Legislators, 7,000 legislators in all 50 states. When I would tell the story there, now, and the organization's bipartisan. It's half Republican, half
sure.
Democrat. When I would tell the story there, I'd have to stop at some point and say, because the Republicans are sitting there thinking, oh, those dirty Democrats. We can't believe those dirty Democrats did that to you. And they never say that, but you know what's going through their mind.
Of course. And if it wasn't you, it would have gone through
right.
yours.
And that's right. And I have to stop and say, now, understand, it wasn't the Democrats who came after me. It was the Republicans who came after me. And there were, some people always will ask me, how did those guys, what was their beef with you? You know, and I think they were jealous.
What was it? I mean, that is insane.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that is most wrong with politics, with the people who are the most motivated, are a lot of times the ones who are the most dangerous. Because winning at all costs can destroy people's lives. And it has not destroyed yours, but I guarantee you it took several years of your life and made it incredibly stressful.
Yeah, one of the guys that had a big part in this, my joke about him, and jokes have a place in seriousness, if he told me the world was round, I would question why I have not joined the Flat Earth Society.
Yeah.
Because He lied more than he ever told the truth.
Did you feel like it was a Gwinnett jealousy thing?
That was, yeah, it was that. It was no doubt about it. I got, like, for example, at one point in time, Sonny Perdue came to me. There was extra money. He had $50 million extra. He goes, what can we do for you? Because I had done a lot for the governor. And I ended up getting a medical building at Gwinnett Tech, and because medical buildings cost a lot because you need a lot more stuff. It's not like just a normal classroom. And it was a conversation between me and Governor Perdue, and he put it in the budget right at the end. It had already gone through the Senate, House had gone through the Senate, had gone through the conference committee. It was still sitting in the conference committee. It was basically done. And so he adds it into the conference committee, boom, and we're voting on it. One person at least took that almost like he got that, but, you know, he didn't give me any credit. Well, I didn't necessarily take any credit myself. I just did it.
Well, even if you took all the credit in the world, average people walking around would have no idea.
No, that's right.
That's the thing about politics is that they're jealous of the things that only eight people know.
Yeah. To this day, I'll go on Georgia Gwinnett campus, and they'll want to take me to the private dining room. They'll want to take me to the—
No, you don't need it.
I said, we want to do lunch, take me to the cafeteria where the students are.
Sure.
I'll talk about the buildings that I helped build, but the buildings are needed to teach the students, but it's about the students.
Of course.
And the amount of students have gone there and graduated— that they're the first member of their family to graduate from college. It's an easy entry point. Totally changes the whole dynamics of what goes on. But Attorney General of the state of Georgia.
I was going to get to him, but you brought him up. Yeah. Go ahead.
He set up an investigation with the GBI, which is fine. I mean, you know, someone wants to investigate, that's fine. Which then caused some rumblings because, you know, here I am, the rules chairman and the GBI is investigating me, but I'm thinking I don't know what they're investigating me for. I haven't done anything. They spent a year investigating me. They spent over $1 million on help going through everything I ever did, looking at all my expense reports, looking at my key fobs for my places I had downtown, looking at all my credit card bills. It's ridiculous.
Sure.
And they came up with, after about a year, the attorney general indicted me. And when I first looked at what he wrote, now, I also, since I help write laws, I understand laws a little bit. If I write you a check, I don't know if the law's changed since then, but if I write you a check for $501 and it bounces and you take that to court, that's a felony. For bouncing a five. Now, if I write you a $499 check and it bounces, that's a misdemeanor. So there's some de minimis rule, and on writing checks is $500. When the state of Georgia came up with 18 felony indictments, we started looking ourselves at all this. Now, they were all true. Every single one of them is true, which at first I'm thinking, I'm in deep trouble if they're all true. Well, when I finally hired my lawyers and had... Actually, my nephew came down, and he had just graduated from law school and had just taken the bar. He wasn't legally a lawyer at that point, but
he knew enough to be helpful.
Right. He came down, and He goes, how much money are we talking about? I don't know, but it's all true. I'm in trouble. He goes, well, let's figure out how much money. So he took out 18 sheets of paper and 18 sheets of paper, you know, 8.5 by 11, drew a line down the middle. On top, we put down what I did on that expense report. On the bottom, we put down what I should have done. Felony number one was, most of them were mileage. I would put down, and my mistake was I would do expense reports once every 3 months. And I would say Snellville to Atlanta, Atlanta to Snellville, Snellville to Atlanta, Atlanta to Snellville.
Not your address to that address.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
And when they started looking at things, maybe on a certain day, I went from Snellville to Atlanta. But then at the end of the day, I went from Atlanta to the airport because I was going off to do something for Waffle House.
Right.
So that was 22 miles off at 50 cents a mile. That was an $11 mistake.
Right.
Now, when my lawyers looked at it, they're going, who did you piss off? Who gets charged a felony for $11? I mean, that's just, you know, some of them got as high as $22. So, that, you know, $11, $20. Again, remember, the state spent over $1 million investigating me to find out, when you added them all up, there were about $500 over 5 years of mistakes. Now, on the other side of the ledger, which, oh, by the way, we gave all this to the attorney general before you even indicted me. We went through things that I didn't take. Like I went to a meeting, a Senate meeting down in St. Simon's Island.
That you didn't do anything with.
Maybe I put it down, but I put down Snellville to Atlanta, Atlanta Snellville versus Snellville to St. Simon's and St. Simon's back, which is $150 difference, mistake in my against me.
Right.
And we went through all these. I decided I didn't think it was right to take retirement benefits. Who works 3 months a year and gets retirement benefits? Also, I wasn't necessarily doing bad at Waffle House. So
yeah.
I exempted myself from retirement benefits. That was hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Absolutely. Because it's only 8 years, I believe, to qualify for health care.
I was $30,000 or $40,000 in stuff I could have taken but didn't take. And I didn't take health insurance. Oh, by the way, the other one, which isn't really a savings for the state, when I first ran for the state Senate, brace yourself, they were paying $10,500 a year. And Joe and I sat down and discussed it, and he goes, well, I'm going to reduce your pay $10,500 because you shouldn't be making money on this. I said, that's fine. That's fair. So now that didn't save the state any money, but I wasn't making one dime more.
Right.
When you added up these three or four things, it was like $650,000, $700,000 that I took myself out of voluntarily. Now, the only person in the courtroom at that point in time who's not really happy with me is my wife, who didn't realize that I'd given up $700,000. She was not very happy with that. But we finally went to court. But even before that, I had ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox News, CNN outside my house every day.
That's horrible.
And my lawyer said I can't even talk to him. And they knew that. They're professionals. They know that. But they're still knocking on the door. And eventually what they want is the picture of me with my hands in front of my face, which I don't want that picture.
Yeah, you were probably told.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that really looks bad. I ironically, one of the charges, when my nephew and I went through and looked at them, I think it was charge 13. When you went through the numbers, they charged me a felony for felony number 13, where when you go through the numbers, I didn't take enough mileage that day. Now, they're still saying it's false because I signed something saying it's true when it was false.
Right. But it was false to their benefit.
It was false to their benefit.
Sure.
And the weekend before the trial, my lawyer said, my one lawyer goes off with my nephew to discuss these 18 things we had come on a sheet of paper. And I'm sitting with my other attorney, and he looks at his phone and says, oh, good news, they want to drop charge 13. Now, I'm going to do whatever my lawyers say because they know the courtroom. I don't. But I said to him, I said, listen to me for a minute. He goes, all right, what do you want to say? I said, well, what if I don't want the charge dropped? He goes, you know, I've been a prosecutor. I've been a defense counsel. I've never had a client not want a charge dropped. Why don't you want a charge dropped? I said, well, I might be wrong, but number one, 18 or 17, it's still a lot of felonies.
Yeah. That could be a long time.
But number two, it was, I think, 30, 40 years
in prison. Which is nuts.
If found guilty on any one or all of them. I said, you know, it's whether 17 or 18 is still a lot. Number two, we've gone through the analysis and found out that I didn't rob the bank that day. I deposited money in the bank that day. Now, the attorney general even knows about all this, but he goes, well, let me think about it. And a few minutes later, the other attorney walks in with my nephew, Josh, and my first attorney says, tell him what you told me. And I go through the analysis with him. He goes, hell yeah, we're leaving that in there. We want to have the attorney general's office prove this charge. And so the first day in court, the attorney general's attorneys stand up, because the attorney general, I don't think, has ever been in court. His attorneys stand up and ask to drop charge 13, which the judge is probably thinking, oh, good, we're getting rid of one. And my attorney stands up as if it's the only charge and says, you know, they have drugged my client through the papers, first page, top of the fold, day in and day out for months. We want him to prove this charge. And so they left it in, which the judge at that point is probably scratching his head. My attorney, one attorney, they played good guy, bad guy. My good attorney opened up. My bad guy attorney was going to close. Good guy attorney gets up there, and he starts reading the charges, which are, in my mind, boring as hell. I mean, it's just legal mumbo jumbo. He reads it and says, you know, according to code section, da 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 da, and he takes out the book and he's looking. And my attorney looks confused, and he turns to the judge and says, Judge, that code section doesn't even exist. They charged my client with a code section that doesn't exist.
There's a black mark for Sam Owens, for sure.
And then my attorney turns to the jury pool and says, listen, I don't think these guys did this on purpose. I think they're good people. I think they just made a mistake, which was kind of my whole argument. And there were five or six charges that they didn't get the right code section, which they could go by. If we had said something beforehand, they could have come by and...
Yeah, but then they had to live with it.
Right, right. And Sam had other problems. Sam had a court case with the where he was defending the Ethics Commission, and the person who had been in charge of the Ethics Commission, who had been fired, she said wrongfully, was suing.
Right.
And the Attorney General's office withheld information. Now, when you're the defense, you get all the information. They can't hold back anything from
it. Of course, yeah, discovery.
On the other side, you know, I can tell my lawyer that, yeah, I killed that guy, and he can't tell the other side that.
Right.
So
He's protected by privilege.
It's one side you have benefit, and the other side he's got to give you everything. So in that case, the judge read him the Riot Act. What do you mean you didn't give all this information? You're legally required to.
Yeah, that is not like a negotiating part of
this. So there are numerous. The case was 3 days long. It wasn't very long. The Attorney General's office brought three witnesses. Two testified for me. And, you know, if I bring you as a witness,
I'm probably testifying against you if I'm part of the prosecution.
Right.
One would stand to reason.
And therefore, if you testify the other way, if I bring you as a witness and you're testifying for me and you say, yeah, Balfour's always been a bum, he's a cheat, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
that really would hurt. So they bring three witnesses. One is the person who does expense reports for the state of Georgia, who our attorney asked the simple question. You know, you've looked at these. You've looked at thousands.
Does everybody do this?
You've been doing this for 30 years. I bet you've seen some dirty politicians. Yeah, I have. This is my attorney. I bet you've seen some real questionable expense reports. Yes, I have. Did Balfour do this on purpose, or he just make a mistake? And she quickly comes back, well, he just made a mistake. Well, my attorney, how can you that quickly say he, how do you know? He was a rules chairman. He could take a per diem every day of the year. $150. I mean, it would have been $50,000 I could have taken, and no one could have questioned it. If I'd been on the phone for 1 minute with one member of the
You were entitled to it, legally.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And why would he take an $11 mileage mistake when he could have taken $50,000? This is their people.
Their witness. Second
person, same thing. Basically testified for me. The third person was the GBI agent who did the interview, who did the whole investigation. And by the end of his testimony, my attorney's asking the judge to charge him with
obstruction
perjury.
Of justice.
No, perjury.
Oh, wow.
He lied under oath. And he did lie under oath. And at that point, I knew, you know, that guy. Because we did a mock trial the weekend before him. One attorney played bad guy. And, you know, I was about to pee in my pants when he started really going after me.
Did you testify?
Yes. A good friend of mine who's a lawyer and a judge said to me at one point, Don, what does your lawyer say about testifying? And they said, well, we'll make that decision when the prosecution's done. What do you say, Billy? And he said, well, Don, don't take this because I'm not trying to compare, but let's say someone's charged with an awful crime, sexual molestation of a minor. There's no physical proof at all, but the charge is made. If the person walks in the courtroom and he doesn't look weird and he's in a suit and he's dressed right and he acts right, chances of him being convicted are very low. If he takes the fifth, I will tell that jury you cannot hold that against him. He has the right to do that, and you cannot hold that against him. His chances of being convicted just went up substantially.
Absolutely.
And you,
because everybody knows what that means.
And you having been a state senator, I don't know how you don't testify. So I did testify. On the last day, in fact, it was funny. I had two governors testify for me. Sonny Perdue, which you would imagine because I worked with him and so forth. He's a Republican. And Roy Barnes, a Democrat.
Of course.
They both.
Everybody that I have ever had from your era on the Republican side talks about what a decent and good man Roy Barnes is.
Yeah. On the same thing in the legislature, I had Republican senators and Democrat senators testifying for me. But in fact, the one interesting Sonny Perdue story, Sonny called me up the night before he was going to testify. He said, Don, I need you to do me a favor. What's that? Can you put me on first tomorrow morning? I said, sure. What is there a problem? He goes, I can't remember if he said his brother, his sister, someone close to him was dying. I said, Governor, if someone's close to you is dying, don't come. He goes, no, I need to be there for you.
Yeah.
So we put him on first thing in the morning, and he testified, and he got in his car and got home, hopefully before that person died. But that's how committed he was. So the two of their three witnesses testified for me. The AJC, after the first night of testimony, their headline for the next morning's paper, but it was online the night before, was, where's the beef? The prosecution better have something better than they've had so far, because this is ridiculous. So they get done. I put on a lot of character witnesses.
Of course.
Roy Barnes and Sonny Perdue don't know about what went on. And in fact, Roy Barnes was, I didn't know anybody else ever did this, but Roy Barnes exempted himself from state retirement, which doesn't surprise me.
He's making plenty of money.
Yeah, yeah. He's not hurt.
His daughter went to Samford. He's a good man.
He is a good man. And we put on different witnesses. I was the last witness of the trial. Even before that, when I got there on the last day, my wife still had to speak and I had to still speak. And we got there early, and because I can't be late for my own trial.
Yeah, apparently.
And I get there, and the only people there are my wife and I and the prosecutor. Now, at this point, I'm not real happy with this prosecutor.
For sure.
And he starts talking to my wife real nice, and I'm like, you know, I won't tell you every evil thought I had in my mind, but he says, yeah, my wife worked at Eggleston Children's Hospital. And he goes, oh, that's so wonderful. My son was in the ICU at Scottish Rite, and they went through everything happened with his son because my wife's just a nice person. And at the end, my wife's like, well, how's he doing today? And I'm thinking, this guy's trying to put me in prison, trying to put your husband in prison. You're asking how his son's doing today. But that's, you know, and he says to her, no, Mrs. Balfour, don't worry. We're not going to ask you any questions, which my attorneys kind of thought that wouldn't happen. And she got up and said a few nice things about me. And then I got up there and we went through mine. The end of that day, all they did was pick the foreman. The next morning they came back and in 30 minutes came back with not guilty on all 18 counts.
Did you feel good about it the night before? Or are you always just nervous?
I had no idea. I had no earthly idea. When I came back the next day, it was funny, the bailiff was there and the bailiff says to me, how are you doing today? And he was just trying to make conversation. There was no one there yet. And again, I was there early. And I said, let me answer that after the decision of the court. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. I said, no, don't be sorry. You were just being nice. I mean, he goes, Mr. Senator Balfour, let me just tell you this. I've been in this courtroom. I'm not a lawyer, but I've been in this courtroom for 20 years. I ain't never seen a case like this in my life.
Yeah.
So we're in a back room when the bailiff finally comes in and says the jury's done. I mean, it was 30 minutes. And I stopped my lawyers at that point before we walked out. I said, let me tell you something. No matter what the outcome of this is, you guys did a great job. You guys did a great job.
Super relieved to get a not guilty verdict.
Yeah, but, you know, part of the game that's played by prosecutors, when you have 18 counts or 25 or whatever the big number is, yeah, we ought to find him guilty of at least one.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, if I'm guilty of one, I'm a felon.
Right.
I mean, that's all there is. Months later, after the court case, I went in and sat down with Governor Barnes just to thank him for what he did. He didn't have to do that. He said, oh, Don, I got to tell you a story because Roy's got stories. He goes, I was in that same court with the same judge last month. And we settled the case, whatever that case was. We actually got settled before the civil case started, which happens a lot from what I understand. And the judge says to me, Governor, could you come back to my chambers? I thought, well, that's kind of odd, but if the case is settled, I guess I can. So he goes back to his chambers, and the judge says to him, Governor, you got to tell me what that Balfour case was about. I have never in my life seen a case like this. The night before, I was worried. He goes, Roy Barnes says, what were you worried about? He goes, I knew the defense would ask for summary judgment. We don't even have to come up with a defense because they didn't prove anything. And I was afraid of that because I really, and if I've had 1,000 criminal trials, everyone says that. That's the first thing you check off the box. And obviously they've proved something. That's why we're in court. But in this case, I really should have given Balfour summary judgment even before the jury got it. But I thought politically that wouldn't be good for Balfour. Balfour obviously bought off the judge or did something.
Yeah.
So, which is actually a good.
Fair.
Had showed a lot of political acumen on the judge's part. So he left the case there for the jury. But he asked Roy Barnes, what was that about? I've never seen a case like this. So the funny thing afterwards, I hadn't talked to the press during this whole thing. At the end of it, I went out and talked to the press, and one of the questions, what are you doing next? And, you know, it was kind of funny because you see this at the end of the Super Bowl every year. I said, well, tomorrow I'm going to Disney World, because I was going to Disney World the next day. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to go to Disney World. I was going to prison the next day. I mean, that's, you never know.
Right.
But with it all being settled, I was going to go to Disney World with my family the next day. So,
do you have animosity towards Senator Schaefer and Sam Mullins, or are you just,
yes,
you passed it?
No, I it's something that won't go away. I stood up in front of the Senate at the beginning of the next session because within minutes I was reinstated to the Senate.
Yeah.
And then I had to be reinstated to the caucus because the caucus had kicked me out. So I was reinstated to the caucus. So the very first session, which I usually didn't take the well on the first day. I mean, people take the well and they talk about, you know, their grandmother or, you know, some one person. I don't do that a lot. But I told Casey Cagle, I said, Casey, who was the lieutenant governor, I said, Casey, I think I need to take the well. He goes, yeah, you do. I said, can you try to get it so I'm the last person? He goes, yeah, I'll do that. I'll make sure you're last. So he kept on saying, is there anyone else? Is there anyone else? Is there anyone else? Right before I got up there, a senator who's now a judge stood up to talk about it's carpet day from North Georgia today, and we're handing out a placemat for your front door, you know, again, the normal stuff that they say. And then when he gets done with this, because I'm
ready,
focusing on what I need to say, and he says, now, let me just say one other thing. When I left to come to work this first day of session, I had a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old hanging on my leg saying, Daddy, don't go, because I was going to be gone all week. And on the drive down here, I was kind of feeling sorry for myself. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm feeling sorry for myself because I'm going to miss my family for a week. there's one member of the 56 of us whose son left yesterday for Afghanistan for a year and is going to be in harm's way and was on the front lines. And he turns to me, and you're not supposed to call.
By name.
By name.
Yeah.
But he couldn't help himself.
I think you get a pass.
That's right. He said, Senator Balfour, let me tell you, I promise you, we will be praying for your son until he returns safely. There's no greater, I'll never forget his speech, is no greater honor than someone who's willing to lay down his life for us. And the whole Senate stood up except for two people. David Schaefer and Josh McCoon. The current chairman of the GOP and the past chairman of the GOP. Ironically, and it is a little ironic, that the past chairman for the GOP, David Schaefer, who you mentioned, is now under his own felony indictments.
I'm glad you asked. I won't say relish. That's the wrong word. You're not losing any sleep over what's happening to him.
I'm not, but I had a lot of people call me and, hey, Don, look at this, ha, ha, ha. And I said, you know.
There's no solace there.
I don't wish this on my worst enemy. And he may be my worst enemy, but I don't wish this on anybody. I know there were, for the 2 or 3 months I was under indictment, there were drugs to put me to sleep at night, and there were drugs to wake me up in the morning.
It's horrible.
Without that, I would go to work. I'd go to work at 5:30 in the morning because the newspapers aren't out there at 5 in the morning.
Right.
And I'd come back at 8 at night because the newspapers aren't out there at 8 at night. So I had to change everything I did. In fact, the week I was about to be indicted, because it was before a grand jury, and a grand jury indicts anybody they want to indict because they only hear from one side anyhow. I called my lawyers. I said, I got a good friend of mine who's a legislator in Indiana. I'm thinking about going up to be with him this weekend just to get away. My wife had planned to go with some girlfriends on a trip to the Outer Banks of North Carolina. She was about to cancel it. I said, no, you've planned this for her. You go. Now, what she's thinking is,
what if I don't have a lot of time?
A person who's being indicted should be depressed. And a depressed person shouldn't be left alone because you don't know what they might do. So she wasn't going to go. So I said, I'll go visit Eric Turner. And then I called my attorneys because if I can be indicted for a felony for $11, are they going to indict me for fleeing arrest, for going away for a weekend? So he called the attorney general's office and the attorney general, when's he coming back? Monday. All right, that's fine. If he gets indicted, we can, I went back the next Monday and had to go to the same Fulton County courthouse, not the courthouse, jail that Donald Trump went to.
Yeah. It's not a place I aspire to be.
No.
When you look at 2024 and 2026, knowing how hard you and guys like Eric Johnson and Tom Price fought and John Linder and Paul Coverdale and the guys in those 90s days that saw Georgia change, and you see what the Republican Party is today in the state of Georgia and nationally, how does it make you feel? As the son of a Southern Baptist pastor,
yeah.
What do you think about the GOP in 24?
I'm disappointed by what I see. The 2020 election happens. 2 weeks later, I run into someone at the grocery store who I would consider a normal,
sane human being,
good conservative. And they were first said, why what's with Brian Kemp? I said, what do you mean? Well, he let Stacey Abrams, he and Stacey Abrams don't even see eye to eye. I don't think he did anything with Stacey. Well,
on very little.
and then came up with, that machine turns every fifth Trump vote into a Biden vote. And I listened to her and I said, I hear you saying that. And I don't know what happens with that machine. So that's interesting, But then they did recounts by hand. and the recounts by hand did not include the machine. And if what you're saying is true, the vote count would be off by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of votes. And it wasn't. So the machine didn't screw up. The Democrats did a number of things that were, getting people to vote early. And then if they don't vote early, they call them up and bug them until they do vote early. Yeah. You know, Republicans like to vote on Election Day. Well, if you skip and forget about Election Day, the next day is too late for me to bug you to come out and vote. And some states like Virginia and some other states are working on a process to try to get Republicans to vote early. Because that's nothing illegal about that, but it, you know, get people to vote early. So,
And you can tell at 10:30 every night when the names are all dropped, you can see who's voting early.
Right.
That's insider information for all of you at home. They know the day you vote. That's why you quit getting the text messages.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, some of the things that have gone on.
That is also why I vote early, so I can quit getting the text
messages.
There you
go. That's a good reason to vote. I would tell people when I was raising money, you know, let's say the limit was $1,000 and people that could afford it, I'd say, you know, you can give me $500 today, but if you do, tomorrow I can ask for the other $500.
Right.
If you give me $1,000, I can't ask you for another dime. Yeah. So why don't you just give me $1,000?
I'll quit calling you. That's awesome. What are you doing today, Senator Balfour? I know you've got a consulting business and you're a loyal friend to the fine people at the country's greatest restaurant chain.
Yeah, and Waffle House has me under retainer, has had for the last couple of years. I spent 40 years of my life at Waffle House, had a great career there. They still have me under retainer.
The chili is still just unbelievable.
Bert's chili. I'll tell Bert you said that next time I see him.
Please do. If he wants to come on the show, I'm happy to have him.
Bert lives somewhere on the panhandle of Florida. He was a Georgia Tech football player. Great guy. And, you know, maybe I'll talk to him next time he's up here. Maybe he will because he likes.
So good.
In fact, he came up with a playing card that, you know, when he walked in the restaurant, because his they put a caricature of Bert on the menu. Well, people that eat at Waffle House, they know Bert. Bert right. walks in, it's like Donald Trump just walked
that's
in.
It's him.
Oh, yeah.
It's him.
and he'll take his playing cards out and he'll sign them and give them a signed playing card. And
he's niche famous.
Oh, yeah. He really is. He really is. So I've got a couple. One thing I'm working on is with the Carter Presidential Library, which is surprising to some people. But they were looking for some right-leaning folks to try to keep them in the fairway. They're trying to make sure that elections are fair and free, and it's fine to question elections. I knew a peanut farmer from South Georgia who in the 60s questioned a state Senate election, and because of it, he got sat in the state Senate rather than the other guy. So it's fine to question elections, but once the questions have been answered, we need to move on.
You should have some confidence in what happened.
We need to move on. So, I've worked with them, and I've got a bunch of Republicans helping out to try to come up with things that we can do to we can disagree with the other side, but we can do it agreeably. I'm sure Roy Barnes and I disagree on a lot. We agree on a lot as well.
He was a little bit different.
He was. Zell Miller.
He still is.
Zell Miller, same thing. Yeah. I don't know how many things Zell and I worked on together.
I've had Georgia College and State University President Kathy Cox on.
Sure.
And this has been really, really great, but I like the people from the other side who will come do it. I really want to get Governor Barnes to come do it because that flag conversation with him, like that, you were in that. You looked under your car. I can't imagine the pressure that guy felt on his life amongst the Democrats.
Well, and he even told me once that he had the FBI call him one day.
Of course.
Saying, we have really good information that there are threats on your life. And he goes, oh, those guys, they're just no governor. That's not.
We don't call you for our health.
Yeah. He had not only GBI, but maybe some FBI for a while around him on that. And it was an important thing to do.
That was courageous.
And then it may have helped Sonny Perdue get elected.
But sometimes doing the right thing
That's right.
Cost can cost you your. Yeah. I wish more people would realize that you rent the seat and you're either going to lose, die, or leave.
That's right. People ask me, "Oh, did you when you finally lost?" Yeah. Well, it's actually it was because I got ill. Like, or you got ill. Yeah, people got sick and tired of me. But the reality was, my next election coming up after my court case, it didn't matter.
It was always going to be tough.
It was going to be tough.
And I would argue with nothing against you, but I would argue that the way the demographics were shifting in Gwinnett County, your political career as the state senator from Snellville, it was going to die of natural causes.
Yeah, it might have been 2 years later, 4 years later, the next person, Republican, went in for 4 years, and then they got voted out by a Democrat, and that's where it's going to stay for a long time. You're absolutely right.
So you seem to be doing okay.
I'm doing fine. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I've got a few gigs. I referee high school soccer.
Yeah.
I had two games last night.
They were offside.
I
can hear the coach yelling at you
now. Oh, yeah. I decided I will not make a correct phone call the entire season, and I just live with it and go on from there.
You know, I'm actually the coach. I have done that because you know them.
Right.
Like, you see them regularly. I have actually gotten to a place where they make a bad call that benefits my team. I will tell him.
All right.
And he's like, it's their ball.
Right. So I'm
standing right here. It's
theirs. Do that for a number of years before COVID. I was running three marathons and 6 to 8 half marathons a year. I was at a certain point when they stopped running marathons because of COVID. It's hard to put in 30, 40 miles a week when there's nothing out there that you're running for. So,
like an aspiring Don Bolio.
Yeah. Yeah. I see Don.
He's
quite
a sick maniac.
Yeah, I see Don every once in a while running around Piedmont Park, and we're doing our 20 miles or 15 miles that day. And
God.
Yeah.
Well, it has been a real honor to have you. I've had Secretary Price, and we talked about Trump, and we talked about flipping Georgia, and we walked down memory lane. The people who are on the other side of it, man, they are better guests than the ones who are in it by a factor of 100. Because, you'll talk about where the bodies are buried.
Right.
And when you get guys in the game, a lot of times they're like kind of protective over what they say. So I appreciate you not doing that.
Well, I can officially say I never buried a body.
Yeah.
But
it was probably one of those counts.
But I may know where the bodies were buried and who buried them, so.
Senator Don Balfour, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
This has been another episode of The Ben Burnett Show. We will see you guys next time.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.